My name is Deborah Allen.
Today is state.
June something.
It's Wednesday, June 19th, Juneteenth, 2019. And I'm speaking with Captain Mary, who is my friend. We are both born before 1969.
Yep.
And we're recording this interview in Shreveport, Louisiana. Okay, Capu, tell me a little bit about yourself. Where and when were you born?
Well, I was born here in Shreveport. It's the old Shumpert that they closed down several years back, in the middle of an ice storm, to which my mother was in town for 2 weeks because of this ice and snowstorm. And then they gave up, went back to where I'm from, Kechai, Louisiana. And that night she went into labor. They had to drive back in the yuck, and she had me. So.
That is no fun drive, because I have driven from Shreveport to Kechai in bad weather. So.
Oh, and plus, some of those roads weren't paved yet.
Oh, no.
Some of those roads were not paved, so it was even worse than what you know.
Yeah.
So.
So, what was your childhood like, living in Kechai?
Well, living in Kechai, at home, it was great. We lived next door to my grandparents on my mother's side, Meemaw and Peepaw, and we had a house next door that they had moved there for my dad and my mom. And I don't really remember a lot the first 4 years, because I was, obviously little. A lot of it I remember from when my sister was born, which was 4 years later, and when she came home in August and everybody had the flu. before school, it was a good thing. We played a lot. My grandfather was real good. Things I didn't know, my mother had two daughters prior to me with the same father who... One passed away. She was 4 or 5 while my mother was pregnant with me. I was born in the middle of January, and then her second child, Cindy, the other one was named Kathy Dean, Cindy passed away. And she had massive chest cancer, and Kathy Dean died of, they think, encephalitis, but people wouldn't let them do an autopsy, so they never knew really for sure what had happened. So I was born in the middle of death, basically. So my mother was very depressed, which I don't really remember that being very little. And then my sister came along, and then I had somebody to play with. And for those years, from what I remember, a lot of time spent with my grandfather and my mom. She had home demonstration meetings, typical stuff from the early 60s that you would think, women and stuff would do. It was pretty much, even though it was rural Louisiana, very rural at the time, we had black people who worked for us, it was pretty typical at the time. Then I got into school. First year, don't really remember a lot. Went to the closest school. It was Longstreet. And that was only for 1 year. And then I went to Logansport, and that was for my second grade. We were there about halfway through it, and then I was out sick. My mother went to school to get my homework, and the teacher was out, and there was a substitute, and she had the door locked, and she wouldn't open the door and ask my mother, "What do you want?" And she said, "I came to get my daughter's homework and stuff," and said she was very rude and stuff. Don't really knew what was going on then. All I knew was next thing I knew, we were going to a private school, and it was a new school in Mansfield. It was called Town and Country, and it was a private school, and they didn't have the building built yet, so they were in churches. I was relentlessly bullied through those elementary years by several guys who were just real buttheads. It had nothing to do with, because by then I knew I'd have crushes on girls, but I also I'd like boys too, but that wasn't the reason. I got bullied just because they were assholes, basically. So, Because there was no, because mother always made, one thing I do remember from early on is always getting into a fight about mom when she insisted I had to wear a dress. I hated dresses. I still hate dresses. And anybody who knows me will tell you, Mary hates dresses. And I knew I hated dresses. And I did look up to my dad a lot, but he was gone a lot from what he was doing. He sold I'm really not sure what you'd call it, elbow knolls and stuff in the oil industry and things like that. And before that, he was working in the oil field with my grandfather, because I can remember him coming home from work, and he would be black from head to toe, just covered in oil. But school, I was relentlessly bullied. And there was a lot of other things going on that I've only figured out recently that didn't have anything to do with me knowing that I like girls and I like boys, but didn't really know what that was, you know, because there was no one around me to talk to it about, and not that I didn't really think there was anything wrong anyway, you know, but
how old were you when you realized that about your sexual or gender identity?
That would probably be like second, third grade, yeah. You know, I couldn't give you an age, but whatever age you are, second and third grade. Because I knew there would be girls that I had crushes on, and then there would be guys that I thought were cute. You know, we had Donny Osmond and the Osmonds and David
right.
Cassidy and Jackson 5 were plastered all over our bedroom walls. But I knew there was girls that I would get crushes on and stuff. But, you know, I didn't really do anything. And my grandmother, I know she usually would notice those things. I mean, you've got a crush on her, and I'd just look at her, and I'd be like, why don't I have a crush on her? She's a girl. You know? And I do remember one instance. I don't know how old I was. Anna was around. It may not even been in school yet. My mother used to keep her hair very short. It was called a pixie then. I looked like Spock. And
can I upload a picture of that to this?
No. Well, I mean, if you find it, it's online. It's just like Anna and me both had Spock haircuts, and so did Bart.
I remember those.
We were all Vulcans. So. And I was a huge Star Trek fan, and even at that early age. But we were in a store somewhere. I think it was Bell's. And mother was shopping, and me and Anna were playing around the clothes and stuff. And I remember one of the employees walked up to her to give her some help for something. And she walked up to us and she goes, oh my God, what a beautiful boy you are. And then I just looked up at him and I looked up at her and I was like, I'm a girl. And I walked off. I'm a girl. I know my mother was just like, okay. Yeah, she's a girl. But, you know, yeah, but yeah, somewhere in second, third grade, I knew I had crushes on them, but I didn't really think anything. I didn't think there was anything to think of it at
right.
the time, you know.
Right.
So being as isolated, I mean, where I live, you know, you grew up, everybody was rednecks. They were growing you up redneck. And honestly, we would take trips out to the battlefield out in Mansfield and stuff, and they would talk about, this is your heritage. You're talking about the Civil War
right.
and stuff. This is your heritage and bought all this and you should be proud of it. And the daughters of the Confederacy would come a couple of times a year and talk about it. And they were older ladies and, you know, and tell us about the rebel flag and how you should be proud of it. So basically looking at it from an adult, because back then I didn't realize there was anything really wrong with it at the time. And that's probably how it works a lot of the time is, realizing that basically they're honing you in to become racist and
right.
dislike black people and anything else that's different from being a redneck white person, you know.
Indoctrination.
Yeah. So in a very subtle and, you know, nonchalant manner, I might add. So, you know, and I was going, I got into high school and stuff. I quit being bullied. Actually, I had a good time. High school was a blast. Still, nobody knew I liked, but back then, I knew by then, you know, I really did like girls, but I also liked a lot of guys. You know, I lost my virginity to a guy when I was 14 years old, and it was my idea. You know, and it was my idea, and then it ended up not being a really good idea and stuff, and my first sexual experience was with a woman towards the end of high school. which probably pretty much cinched it. But I probably didn't really know what, and plus on top of that, I'll have to say before I go into that, on my grandfather's side of the family, I have cousins who also are gay and or lesbian. And I remember as a child, me and my sister both, and we'd be playing with our Barbie dolls, because I had Barbie dolls, we had Ken dolls, and I think I had a G.I. Joe doll too, because I had to have a G.I. Joe when I was a kid. And we had Hot Wheels and all of that. And we were playing with the Barbie dolls, and two of the cousins were playing the Barbie dolls with us, and I just remember every time we would see them, and then me and Anna were just like, well, they're not like everybody else. You know, they're different than other boys, you know. They play dolls with us and, you know, and stuff. So, but other than making that, you know, kind of a you know, noticing that, we still didn't really think anything of it. But first sexual experience with a woman was in high school, before I got out of high school. But I didn't really know and come into it my own until later in the 80s when I met Bart, and then later, because I met Bart first, and then I met Daddy a little later down the road. And when I was hanging out with them and stuff, and you know, and I knew they were gay, and stuff, and then I realized, and then it dawned on me, I was just like, oh, well, but I like women too. And then Bart was the first person I told that, I said that, you know, I like guys all right, and I've been with a lot of guys, and I said, but I really like women too. There's a lot of really pretty women out there. And so and he said, well, you're bisexual. And I said, yeah, I guess I am. So, and that's when I pretty much figured I was bisexual. So, and then we got in the 80s, and then I met Debbie, and then, the 80s were fabulous. Worked in a hair salon. Worked in a hair salon. That's where we met Debbie. I remember when I met Debbie, she lived on a house on Dizelle, and she was pregnant with her daughter, Ashley.
I was still married and pregnant.
Yes, and she was still married, and her oldest son was only 12, which blows me away that he's what?
40-ish.
I know.
41.
That blows me.
Yeah.
That just blows me away. And but I remember she was very pregnant with Ashley, and she was telling me about how her house was haunted and stuff, and it was raining, and she was sewing outfits for drag queens.
Right. So, I made a living. So
yeah, exactly. You made a good living doing that. So, because you were really good at it. And I'm telling you, I don't think you were. I wasn't working at the hair salon yet, and I don't. Were you working at the hair salon yet?
No. I had met you guys at the bar.
Right.
And I was in beauty school. Actually, I was designing clothes, and then I went to beauty school. Well, I was finishing up beauty school, so I was making money with the clothes thing.
Yeah.
And then once I got out of beauty school, Dan hired me at the salon with you and Bart.
Okay.
But did you? I think I got there before. I started working at the salon before you did, I think.
Yeah, and did you start working on the one on Pines Road, or
no,
did you start it at the one on Line Avenue?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, because I only hung out at the other one. Dan didn't hire me until a little bit after that, and he hired me as the shampoo and go-get-it girl, you know. And,
yeah.
Or the, what are they, oh, gopher girl, I think that's
yeah.
it, the gopher girl. And but you learn a lot about hair when you're even not doing hair, and I also learned that I didn't want to do hair.
Right.
Yeah, so. But it was fabulous because I wasn't much on dressing up. As I already stated, I hated dresses. And but they loved playing with my hair. I had the biggest hair. You talk about big hair in the 80s. I had the biggest hair. When we went out, it was huge, huge hair. Big mounds of gorgeous, wavy, brown hair.
But they made you a model.
Yes, they made me a model. They made me a model, and I modeled some stuff for the salon.
And the media, the postcards and everything.
Yes.
And then the hair, big hair book. Remember that big hair book?
Yes, I remember the big hair book. That was the big hair book.
Yeah.
And the giant posters.
Salon magazine.
Yeah, that was it. Was that the same one that had... what was it that made the salon, the other one, Salon of the Year?
Right, that was it. Okay, I had to pause that for a second, and now I'm resuming, and we were talking about working at Ultimate Appearances, the hair salon.
And where was he? Because I remember I said
you were modeling for the.
Yes, I was modeling. It was like the most ultimate plain dress up you could ever possibly imagine, and I was the only one who agreed to do things topless, which was a big selling point for Dan. He wanted someone to do something topless, and I ticked off somebody's girlfriend. Not trying.
But your hair was long enough it covered everything.
It covered everything. Yeah. We put a little tape and put some makeup on it over my nipples. And so I was just pretty much waltzing around in my jeans with no shirt on.
Right.
You know, so, and this gorgeously huge hair.
Right.
And makeup, because Debbie had done the makeup and stuff, and they did black and whites, and they did color shots. And then I don't remember that model's name. That he was a real good looking guy. But he was the one whose girlfriend got all ticked off. Those were really good. So and yeah, I made what was the that was it the magazine?
Right, the International Salon Magazine.
Yeah,
it was an international magazine. It was huge, and you could flip through it and see all the new current hairstyles and stuff. So it was a really big deal for a salon from Shreveport, Louisiana.
To make it into
international.
This book. Yeah. It really, really was.
Yeah.
I mean, really, at the time, Ultimate Appearances was like the salon out of the entire Shreveport-Bossier area and surrounding areas. It's just like, that was the one that everybody, because they used to have what they called, quote-unquote, the salon wars with all the other salons that were around.
Santos,
mainly, and there was one other, wasn't it? The goofy guy, because Kathleen went and worked there after a while. I can't remember his name.
I can't remember another one.
Doug.
Okay.
I think it was Doug.
Yeah,
Doug.
Definitely, yeah.
And, but I think he worked at, like, Santos or something for a while, so... But yeah, we had that, so we were always, you know, everybody was trying to outdo everybody's hair and everybody's outfit, you know, because we all had everything was paisleys and brooches and big, huge, gaudy necklaces, which was real easy for me and my sister when she was still there going out, because my grandmother had big, giant, shiny brooches and necklaces and all this stuff from the 40s and 50s. It was just perfect for what we were doing.
Right.
So. And it was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed the heck out of it. And I explored men, and I explored women, and I enjoyed every single bit of it. You know? So I was always out to have a good time, and I had a great time back in the 80s.
So tell me about the first time you came out, whether it was to your family, your mother,
my sister,
she guess? Or?
No, well... My cousins, the ones I were talking about earlier, now they've been asking my grandmother and stuff about me and that for years, and my grandmother's always been like, what, Mary? No, she likes men, and you know, and bless her heart. And I love you, Mima, but you know, it's just some things you don't tell certain people.
That's
and she
right.
was one of them. So and now Anna always knew, and she's in that was the person I probably when I came out was I was working at the Philadelphia Center when it was on Centenary. I think it's still on Centenary and Olive, was that it? Maybe. And there was a girl who worked there, and she made a pass at me, and then we started dating, and we got really serious, and I realized I needed to say something to Mom, and I told Mom, and she actually took it quite well.
Yeah.
She was a little upset, but she took it. I said, don't worry about it. I'm exactly the same person you've always known. And,
yeah.
You know, screwed up here, did good there, you know. Yeah. This is like, I ain't no different, and she got over it pretty quick. So,
right.
But she was really the only person I told other than Anna, and there was really no need to tell my sister because she already knew, you know. And, but that was the time she did, because me and Debbie.
Me.
Debbie, yes, this Debbie, not some other Debbie. I think you're the only Debbie I've ever known. Or Deborah. Yeah, Deborah. Deborah, Deborah, Deborah. I did not tell Mother when I was dating Debbie, because at the time I didn't think she could handle it. So, but it was when I was, seeing the other girl, Faye.
Right.
That was when I told Mom, because we were getting really serious and thought that it was headed somewhere even better, but then that didn't happen either. But Mom got over it, so, you know, she got over it. And
the girl wanted to play games, and I, you know, I was way past high school games. I was in my 30s at that point. It was just like, either you're serious or you're not, and I was just like, fine, you break up with me, you won't get back with me. And then she desperately tried for the rest of the time I worked at the center to get back with me, and it wasn't until the day they fired me over some stupid shit that I don't even remember what it was, but it was useless. They just wanted me out of there because of who was running the place at the time. And I remember one of the girls I worked with called me on the phone a couple of weeks later, and she said that Faye said when I walked out and had taken all my stuff and walked out, and then she said, it was a couple of days later, she goes, I guess she's really gone. And Ursula just looked over at her, and she was like, well, what did you think, bitch? Is she yeah, she's gone, and no, she's not coming back, and this was like she told you, was that was it, you know. So, you know, and then Ashley had her, was it Julia? Was she in the hospital with her, Julie?
Michael, probably.
Michael, that was it.
Yeah,
it was her first kid.
15 years ago, yeah.
Yes. We were at the hospital. Debbie said, come see Ashley, she's had her first child. And he's in the
ICU.
ICU. And I said, okay, I'll be up there. And I got up there, and we were, there's a dog out there. And and we went outside, and then Ashley, we were all three going to go do something. Were we going to go get lunch or something? And you lagged behind for a few minutes, and me and Ashley went and got in the car, my car. And then we were sitting there looking at you, Debbie, and you were talking to somebody. And Ashley kept going, God, my mom knows so many people, and blah, blah, blah. And she just has to sit there and talk, blah, 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 blah. And she goes, do you know who that is? And I was like, I have no idea who she's talking to. I said, but that younger girl she's standing next to looks really familiar. And then I was sitting there, and then all of a sudden it was just like, I had this epiphany, and it was just like, and then I sat up in the seat, and then I looked at Ashley, and it's like, I know who that is. She goes, who is it? And I was like, let's just get your mother in the damn car and get the hell out of here. And it was Faye.
Oh, wow.
You were talking to Faye. She had gained she had gained so much weight, I didn't recognize her.
Okay.
And it had only been maybe 2-3 years, I guess. Yeah. So, because that was 2001 when they let me go, and she had Michael Wynn.
Oh, gosh, he's 15. He just turned 15, so, yeah.
What year was that?
Don't make me do the math.
Oh, sorry, because I can't either. couldn't have been more than a few years, four tops. But, yeah, she'd gained so much weight, I didn't even recognize her. And because I was just like, I know who that is. Let's get your mother, get her out of here.
I want to back up a little bit.
Okay.
And we talked about, we went from high school, and then we talked about working at the salon, and then Philadelphia Center.
Right.
It was during the salon years that we started watching all our friends.
Yes, many friends. And I maybe not remember all the names, but one of the first ones was John David.
John David Horning. And that's a common thread for so many of us that decided we're going to fight this.
Right.
Bart talked about it in his interview that John David and David Cooper
were
the two that were like, we can't take any more of this, because there were so many that died, and we couldn't go to all the funerals.
I know. It was horrible.
And
they didn't know what it was.
Right. We didn't know how
they were calling it grids. They didn't know what it was.
They didn't know how it was transmitted.
Yeah.
And that's, we were all go to David Horning's house on Sundays. And
every Sunday.
And
all the fabulous food that he would cook. And
you
could make baklava from scratch.
Baklava! Right.
And it was...
Yeah, and we didn't know. He didn't know. No one knew exactly what caused it. And I had small children, and I quit taking them to his house.
I remember.
I was scared.
Right.
They would contract this disease that nobody knew.
Right. But nobody knew.
Knew. And when we finally found out what caused it and everything, I felt so guilty.
Well,
making my kids wait, because he loved my kids so much.
And the thing was, and I felt guilty, and so did Bart, because also John David, or John Diva, as we usually called him sometimes, because he was such the diva. He was a wonderful person.
Right, creative.
But he very creative, like he could cook like there was no tomorrow.
Right.
Wonderful parents, lovely parents, and but he was a hypochondriac.
Mm-hmm.
And
That's another.
Everybody kept going, oh, it's just because, you know, I only knew him because I was going over there with Bart and everybody, and I enjoyed him, and he was such a great person. Oh, and he gave me for my birthday a beetle thermos.
Oh, wow.
I still have it. And the glass inside of it was not broken.
Oh,
it's
wow.
It's up in my closet. Because him, we had the same birthday.
Okay.
That's right.
Oh,
I forgot that. He was born January 19th.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was just younger than me, but we were both born on mm-hmm. January the 19th, and he gave me his beetle thermos. He didn't have the lunch kit, but he had the thermos,
awesome.
And he gave me the thermos. But he was a hypochondriac, and everybody would be like, oh, it's just disease of the week, girl. Don't
yeah.
worry about it. He's going to be fine. He's going to go to the doctor and get some allergy meds, et cetera,
right.
et cetera, or something for his anxiety. And
but then, he started losing weight
and
rapidly.
Then he started, and he was gone. It was
it
like
was that fast.
It was that fast. It was like he was okay, he lost weight, and then he just died.
Right.
Period. And it was just devastating.
Right.
And I've never in my life seen anything like it. But then it was so many whose names I can't even remember,
right.
who we used to hang out with, and then we just didn't see them anymore.
That's right.
And it's because they died,
mm-hmm.
you know. And maybe sometimes the families probably didn't make a big falderall about it because there was so much
stigma
going with it, and fear and shame, and it was a terrible time, and But then there was David Cooper and Randy and David.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to go over their house all the time. And
right.
I love David Cooper. Oddly enough, my grandparents and my mother, well, my grandmother and my mother both knew his father because he was the one who ran the art thing at Centenary. And they knew of him because of that. And when I said something about David Cooper one time, she goes, is he any relation to him? And I said, yeah, that's his dad.
Yeah.
You know, and fabulous dude. Always enjoyed his company. We always had so much fun together. He, at the Artist Transit, when I first came into the scene, after I had met him, and they said, come on, David did something for you. And I came in there, and there was this giant crayon portrait of me coming out of the light socket.
That's right.
With huge hair and a dress.
It's a picture somewhere.
But it was paisley dress.
Yeah.
Holding
a
bag.
Yeah. Of cat food.
It says cat food on it, and it says above it, the arrival of
Cat
Food
Mary.
Now, Bart came up with the name, but that made it official. And fortunately, we took pictures of that.
Yes.
There are pictures of that, because it was only up there for a couple, 2-3 weeks, because it was like, that was the art wall. David did something different on that wall every couple of 2 weeks,
yeah.
to once a month. There was always something different. But yeah, that was like my official big splash. It was like, right, that was when I really did officially become Cat Food Mary. So,
right.
And depending on who you are, you get two different stories.
That's
so,
right.
Which of both are true now, because I have lots of kitties. But I really, really do. But yeah, then later David got sick.
Yeah.
And then he died. That funeral I did go to, and it was just gut-wrenching. My
mm-hmm.
sister was already living in Houston. She came in for the funeral. It was in that big Catholic church down there on Jordan. What is
mm-hmm.
that? What is that?
St. John Virgin.
St. John's, okay. It was there. And the turnout was just... But see, by then... We already knew. They finally knew what it was. They knew it was AIDS. They knew what it was doing to the body. I don't think they were still sure exactly how it was doing it to the body, other than destroying the immune
right.
system. But there was no drugs or anything
right.
to combat it. And I think David lived a little longer than expected, but it still wasn't that.
Right, it was
yeah,
pretty quick.
It was still pretty quick.
It's less than a year after diagnosis.
Yeah.
And that's how it was back then. You get diagnosed, less than a year, you were gone. Of course, we have a few long-term survivors like Bobby Darrow.
Bobby.
You know, it's a miracle, you know. But
how he survived all these years.
I know.
And how he managed to do it until now, that they have so many,
right.
so much wonderful treatments now. I mean, if you find out that you have AIDS or HIV, you're going to be around.
Yeah.
You're going to be here.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't like that back in the 80s and the 90s. You found out, and that was it. You knew at some point, no matter how hard you fought, you were going to die. You know,
yeah.
You started getting your stuff, you know, you started getting things in order, you know,
right.
For it. You started preparing. And it was sad, so.
Right. And you know, it's one thing for it to get old and see your friends pass away, but it's so abnormal to be young and watch all your friends just wither
yeah.
away and die that I tell people all the time that we have residual effects, you know, PTSD from it.
Yeah.
I mean, totally. Just,
totally.
You're not supposed to go through that. Parents aren't supposed to lose children like they were losing
right.
them either in that. But, yeah, it was a really rough time, and things are different for people now.
Yeah, very different.
Than it is now. So that's one of the things I really wanted to talk about, that those things kids now won't have to go through.
You know, they never have to worry about that. And they've got it down to, what, a few pills a day?
Yeah.
You know, and there's that one that I see advertised now all the time on
right.
TV, which right there has pulled so much of that stigma out because
right.
you didn't talk about it.
Right.
They didn't want it. Well, you should use condoms. Oh, don't talk about condoms.
Right.
You know, and you still got a lot of straight people out there who still, because I worked at the Philadelphia Center, and there was just certain people, you just,
yeah.
no, abstinence is the only way. And it's just
yeah.
like, yeah, right. And teenagers, you say no, the more you say no, the more they're going to go out there and
right.
do it. And it doesn't matter if they're straight or gay, black, white, doesn't matter. You say no, they're going to go out and have sex, and if they have it unprotected, they're at risk, period.
So, what advice would you give your teenage self?
My teenage self?
Yeah.
Ooh. Well, that's interesting. I had so much fun as a teenager. Probably don't have so much fun. Remember the show, That 70s Show?
Yeah.
In the 70s, I was That 70s Show. I mean, it was just like, pretty much like that. The only character we didn't have probably was a Fez. So,
right.
You know, we had a Kelso, we had a Hyde, you know,
yeah.
we had a Jackie, we had a, you know, a Donna. You know?
Yeah.
It was just like, don't have so much fun, you know, maybe try to study a little bit harder. Yeah. Maybe, you know, try to make, because the only things I really made great grades at was general math, which
right.
was, well, stupid ass simple, and typing,
yeah.
and bookkeeping of all things. And if you asked me to try to keep books right now, I'd be like, hey, you're right, I don't remember any of that. But I can type like a madman.
So, what are some of the things you're most proud of in your life?
Working at the center,
uh-huh.
especially the first couple of years. It got really hard after that because
yeah.
they had, the executive director, he was mainly basically a pretty figurehead more than anything.
Right, and he was very ineffective.
Very,
ineffective. During the same time you did.
Yeah, he made it very, very hard to work there.
Right.
And, but working at the center and going out and trying to teach people, you know, this is how you protect yourself, and this is what you do to keep yourself from getting, because they had plenty of drugs at the time, but you still, as you do now, you need to use protection.
Yeah.
And getting that through people's head around here, and still right now, 2019, it's still difficult around here. You
right.
know.
Yeah.
It is. It really is.
It's so religious.
Yeah. It's because it's so Bible-based and stuff. So.
Yeah.
And, but that and, what else would I, well, when I won that guitar.
Oh, my gosh. Talk about that. That was amazing out there.
We were, I was working at a store in Kichai, at a little convenience store, and we were listening to the radio, or it was the TV, I don't remember, and I heard on the radio, and they said they were having a lip sync contest, and the prize was a Fender Stratocaster. Well, at the time, I was still playing. I haven't played in years. I still have the guitar, though, however. You don't let go of things like that. And I was just like, oh. And they said, you got to call in, or you're a blah, blah caller, you know, you'll get a chance to go in. Well, I was just like, I was at work, and I was like, well, I'm calling B, because she talked like this, I don't care, you go ahead, go, you call. And she said, yep, okay, you're in. I was like, oh, really, that's it? He said, you're the only one called. I was like, woohoo!
So I called Debbie and I called some other friends and I said, I'm going to go enter this, I'm going to be in this air guitar contest or lip syncing air guitar contest and try to win this guitar. And
who it was signed by?
Oh, Allison Chains.
Chains.
Allison Chains. And at the time, probably the most popular grunge band other than Soundgarden there was back in the 90s. Because the second, there was, a, they also had another Stratocaster, which was a Fender Strat Squire, which were made in Korea.
Right.
They're, I've played them. They're terrible. And it was signed by Kenny Wayne Shepherd. You still got.
Okay.
Okay. And so I wanted, of course, the Strat, the other Strat. I didn't want the Squire. I wanted the one with Allison Chains signatures on it. And the night came. We went up there, and Debbie's like, you got your routine down? And I was like, well, yeah, in my head. I'm just going to go up there and do whatever. And I ripped my shirt off, and I had on this little tank thing or something, and ripped my shirt off, and the mic was on, and I started singing to the Allison Chains song that was I had chosen to air guitar to. And, you know, just, what, about a minute and a half, and then we watched everybody else who were, sorry, terrible, especially the really drunk guy.
Yeah.
The really, really, really drunk guy who was so drunk. And he got up there, and he hovered over what, which was nothing, obviously, on the stage, and finally stood up and did his arms up in the air like he was holding up a guitar, and he was barely standing up, and then he started doing his hands back and forth, and it just looked like he was freaking jacking off. Really, really, really hard. And anyway, so, and we watched all the other ones, and everybody did things like Metallica and Eric Clapton and stuff. It didn't make any sense to me. And they did it by audience applause. And I got up there, and they said, Cat Food Mary. And then I wiggled my boobs, one of them I got, and I wiggled my boobs, and everybody screamed, and then the really, really, really drunk guy was like, oh, I think I should win over her, and everybody was like, and then I won. Yay! And I won the Allison Chains Fender Stratocaster that was made in Mexico,
yeah,
which is a very, very nice guitar.
Yeah. Okay, for our last question,
okay,
how do you want to be remembered?
I want to be remembered for being me, because if there's one thing a lot of people have said about me to me is you've never been afraid to be yourself.
That's true.
And I know when to hold my tongue and then when really to say something, when something's really grievously incorrect. That I had a lot of fun. My later years were spent doing a lot of growing up, taking care of my grandmother in her dying years, and I have a lot of cats. You can remember me for that too, because Cat Food Mary. But just that I, you know, I wasn't afraid to be myself. I've helped as many people as I could along the way, even if it was just something insignificant, like, you know, helping somebody pull their pants up who was in the bathroom, because I did this one time. And she was a burn victim, and she, her hands were almost melted. This was on a trip to Houston, and she just looked at me, and she couldn't even speak, and she just looked, and I was like, do you need me to pull up your pants? And she was just like, and she shook her head up and down, yes, and I pulled her pants up, and when I walked out, and I said, are you okay? And she nodded yes, got her pants zipped up, and then there was a guy sitting outside of the bathroom waiting for her, and I said, your wife's in there. I helped her get her pants and stuff up. I said she should be out in a minute. He was like, thank you so much. It's those, you know, those are the kind of things, you know, that really people should think more. It's those little things like that that most people wouldn't even think to do, much less anything, but do those things.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't matter if they're black or they're white. It doesn't matter. If they're in distress or you see something you can do, even if it's simple as getting a bag of 50-pound dog food off of a shelf for a woman who's twice your age.
Yeah.
You know, do those things and be true to yourself and always be yourself and never be afraid of being yourself, ever. And that's, I guess that's be about it.
Okay. Well, thanks, Cat Food.
Hey, you're welcome, Deb.
So, are you finished? Yes.